All right, so everyone, today is Zone 1. Welcome, welcome all. Yay. All right, so since we are recording this, so let me just kind of explain. So this is the only one of the three of these things that we do every month that is on YouTube, okay? It's also the only one that's recorded, all right? So that's, you know, a different aspect of it. So we have these Zone meetings. If you're watching this, because it's already recorded and you've never watched any of our live streams and don't know the announcements. So basically, in my effort to provide something for everyone worldwide when it's still Shabbat where they live, I've broken the world up into three zones or ranges of time zones so that we can have some interaction when it's Shabbat where you are, okay? So Zone 1 covers the time zones that cover the U.S., Canada, Mexico, South and Central America, the islands that are all in within those ranges, basically like Pacific to Eastern time, okay? And it also covers just the local congregation. So every other month, we switch between those on live stream and those here locally. This month, it's the local people here who are nicely lining up for their questions. So everybody is welcome to attend all three of the meetings. Okay, this Zone 2, which is Europe, Africa, and the UK, and ranges all the way as far east as probably about India. Okay, that is for the second Saturday of the month. We did that actually this morning, okay, at 10 o'clock. And then the next one will be on the 13th of January. And then we have Zone 3, which is the furthest away, which is like Australia, the Philippines, New Zealand, Fiji, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, et cetera, et cetera. And those guys are on the third Friday of the month, okay? At 10 o'clock Eastern time here. All right, so attend all of them. When it's your zone, you get to ask questions. But bear in mind, people will ask the question you wanted to ask if you would come. I promise you. Happens all the time. People come to me saying, wow, I'm so glad I went to that meeting because someone else asked my question and I got to hear the answer. So that really works well. All right? All right, so we're going to begin here with Taylor. Let me get my scriptures out in case you may want me to look something up.
So my question was, I see a lot of representation for things in scripture. For example, like conditions that people had, like the woman who bled, like when people have like demons or something, mentally, when Saul had that thing going on and David had to play for him. But I was wondering, why don't the scriptures go into specifics about like mental disorders? Like, I never see, it's always ever like, oh, that person had a spirit or a demon and they toss themselves about. Do you know why Yahweh didn't go into the specifics? And does that say anything about how he views mental illness?
Okay, let me answer the last part first. It doesn't say anything about how he views mental illness, okay? What it does tell us is that the, I don't want to say technology, but our effort to understand has grown over the centuries, okay? And so you go back far enough. Let's put it this way. Today, modern day, do we see a lot of mythologies just popping up brand new? No. They were all generated when? At the same time, a long time ago, when people didn't understand how the sun and the moon and the stars worked, and didn't understand how the seasons worked. So they made up and created a lot of mythologies to try to explain these things, okay? And the same thing with mental illness. I mean, if they could not understand something, they would often try to create a story or some supernatural way that these things would come about. That's not to say that world doesn't exist. It certainly does, but it doesn't necessarily get involved as much as we want to think it does. Same thing with Yahweh. Yahweh doesn't get as much involved in a lot of things as we might like to think he does. A lot of it is just allowed to happen, okay, as he created us, you know, and through creating us and the process that we reproduce, there's a lot of things that go sideways in the reproduction. And, you know, we end up with certain deficiencies or handicaps, even if they're minor, and some of them are much more major, okay? But all of us have something going on. And so I think that the answer really has to do with, in those days, okay, the digging into to find out and understand why things are and what affects things was not really done to the level that it's been done since. By since, I don't mean like yesterday, but over the centuries, you see this kind of going into the curiosity to understand how things work and what makes them work and why they work and why they don't work. And why do some people seem to have this thing going on in their lives, whether it's a physical health issue or a mental health issue, okay? And so, you know, I would tell you absolutely with 100% confidence that if you have most psycho-emotional problems, you're not demon-possessed, okay? Yes. It's not a spiritual problem, okay? It's a generational problem. When I say that, I mean we tend to not understand that it's not just my physical characteristics that get passed on to my children combined with my wife's physical characteristics, but also the other things that tend to go there. If there's alcoholism in your family, there tends to be alcoholism that continues in your family. If there's, you know, a genetic or some sort of problem with cardio issues or, you know, heart issues, they tend to be passed on. Same thing with mental health. Okay, people who tend to have mental health issues, their children have a higher chance that they would likely have mental health issues. And so it's not necessarily a spiritual thing, meaning it's outside of you. And so why do we not see Yahweh explaining more in the scriptures? Because the people then didn't understand anything more than what we see. Okay, so we're led to see what's happening. Now, when you see people that are possessed, a lot of the times that you see it, and it's very, very rare in scripture that this happens anyway. I mean, you just don't see it come up very much. There are a few times where we understand there is something going on because they're actually interacting with Yeshua. Okay, he actually has a conversation with them. And so now we're talking about something that we can understand is outside of that person. All right? So you do see a lot of healings going on, and you see a very, very, very few casting outs going on. All right? And so that's really more the deal, is that most people need healing, not casting out. Yeah. All right? And that's, of course, and what you also don't need, and please, all of you out there, you know, keep the emails away and just keep your fingers from tapping and typing. All right? What we don't need is deliverance ministries. Those are the most dangerous thing ever invented. All right? You don't need those ministries. And if you're a part of that, I'm sorry. I think you're in the wrong place, okay? Because that is never what you see in Scripture. You know what you see in Scripture? Yeshua telling it to get out. You don't see Yeshua telling them, listen, confess your sins, repeat after me in public, and tell everybody all the dumb things you did, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that none of that is anywhere in Scripture, okay? I've done deliverance once or twice, and you know what I did? I told whatever it was, knock it off, get out, you're trespassing, whatever, and they shut up and they stopped. I didn't have the as a matter of fact, the person didn't want me to do it because they were afraid of the retaliation from the spirits. I don't know if it was a mental health issue or a real spirit issue, but after I did what I did, they stopped. And all I did was just spontaneously just take a hold of the situation and tell them to knock it off. Okay, and told them they were not where they belonged and had no authority, et cetera. So whatever I just said spontaneously, it was not a scripted thing. And I did it on the authority that I have. But that being said, it was not like what you would normally think a deliverance ministry would do. I did not ask the person to say anything. I didn't ask permission. Now, bear in mind, he was talking to me as his rabbi. So I had a default relationship to do that, all right? Okay, but I have to also say he panicked initially, but then he was happy to see that whatever voices he was hearing stopped. Why? I don't know. Was there actually things that literal entities bothering him and talking to him? I don't know. If there were, I believe that Abba blessed the authority and endorsed the authority of me to tell them to go away. Okay? And I have to admit, I was not in the right attitude when I did it either. I was mad. I was tired of the harassment this poor young man was going through. I was tired of having him tell me all about it. And I just lost my temper, quite frankly, and told them they need to get out. I did, and I probably used some language that Elder would never use. Okay? Even though we did say crap 3 times today. All right. All right, so because it was just a spontaneous thing. I just took authority as a father figure in this young man's life, and I just said, enough. Okay, does that answer the question?
It does. I just wanted to see, because I know, not for like shortcuts or anything through stuff, but I know that like you've mentioned with like anxiety and depression and like normal things like that, not some like schizophrenia or anything, but you've mentioned it in a way like we're mentally weak in that place who don't have like chronic depression or anxiety, right. but people are mentally weak. So I was wondering if like the scriptures don't mention it because we like don't deal with it in the way that people in the past did. I had, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not that we don't deal with it the way they did, which we don't because they don't understand a lot of it. But the thing is, and when I tell people they're weak, it's not you're weak because you're depressed. I find people are weak because they don't take the fight to it. They don't struggle against it like I believe that they should. I'm not saying they don't struggle, but they really don't put in the, you know, I'm going to give it everything or die on this hill type of thing. I'm going to beat this thing so it doesn't continuously ruin my life. And that's where I think that they end up being weak, you know. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong and maybe that's just too easy for me to say because I don't suffer from that. But I deal with so many people that do, okay? And I don't see the urgency to fight that fight. You know, I see people wanting to avoid it, medicate it, soothe it, distract it, or some other thing as opposed to actually dealing with it, all right? Now, bear in mind also, we now know that a lot of this does have a chemistry to it, right? Like, if you eat certain things, it does affect people, some people very much. I mean, you give a child sugar, see what happens, right? So you see a connection, okay? And you can see how it affects them. And some foods do affect, you know, either lack of certain things or an overabundance of certain things do affect us in our emotions and in our ability to think straight. Because some of us have dealt with, you know, things that make our heads a little bit cloudy and other things help bring us crispness and clarity. Okay? And so diet is a big part of this. Diet is a huge part of this. The chemical side of it. Okay? The chemical side of it. That's something that's never addressed in your scripture because they did not delve into that in those days. Okay?
I have two more. The other one's longer, but the other one's shorter, if I could
ask. Try the short one.
Okay. So.
And then you could always get back in line, so it's okay.
Yeah. A lot of the things, like, with fashion that I'm into, I've found like I'm naturally gravitated towards things from other people's cultures and different countries like that. So I was wondering, I'm always thinking that if I like find a piece from like Egypt or something like that, I'm like, okay, a person wore this in Egypt, but they're connected to something pagan, so I shouldn't wear that. Is that like wrong for me or?
No, I mean, look, when it comes to clothing, not so much clothing as much even as it's more like things that are accessories to the clothing, unless the clothing was some sort of priestly garments of some sort for some other religious belief system. But the main thing is you should, I'll use the example of kashrut, you should read all the ingredients on anything that you buy, and then you should do the research to find out and understand what those ingredients actually are and where they come from. You know, we had a problem the other day with some donuts because people don't know necessarily when they're new about mono and diglycerides and where they could be coming from, and you have to do some research. So the same thing for you, right? You're now learning that, hey, if I go and find something from another culture, which, by the way, all of you that like antique stores, same thing. You might buy something in an antique store and find out it was some sort of pagan thing that was used for something, right? So you have to do some research, okay? There's an effort that needs to be made to understand, was this just something that was aesthetically pleasing or was it functional in some way, symbolic of something that was something you don't want to be involved in, right? So it just takes a little bit of research, okay? Did that answer your question? Okay? Look, it's kind of like I've told everybody, the verses that talk about not having idols and stuff and not making images, it's not saying that you can't have any artwork or sculptures. It just can't be anything that either A, you start praying to or thinking is Elohim, or B, other people have used in the past. Okay? So if you happen to really like, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's fish or some other animal or whatever it is, or some bird or whatever, and this is something that like is your thing, okay? And you want to, you know, have a picture or have, and you're just looking at it as appreciating because it's something that you really think is pretty cool, but it's not something you're praying to or anybody ever prayed to, that's not a problem. Okay, look, my father collected bulls because he worked on Wall Street, okay? And so anywhere he went traveling, if he found a store that had things in it, and then one of the things it had was like a bull made out of this or that, he had them made out of everything you can imagine. you know, he didn't pray to them. Nobody ever prayed to them, okay? Now, that doesn't mean there aren't bulls out there that people might have prayed to, but so you have to do your research, and if you're buying something, you know what it is. If it's just art, it's art, okay? And so the same thing with you with your clothing stuff. If it's just meant to be clothing and accessories because of the aesthetic appealing aspect of it, aesthetically, you know, it's appealing aesthetically, then that should be fine. Just do some research, okay? So that nobody looks at you, oh, that's kind of a priestess, blah, 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 from this culture. And then you're like, that wasn't what I meant to do. Okay? It takes a little bit of effort. All right, John.
Shabbat shalom, Rabbi. Sorry, my mind is just tired.
Yes, I can see how a tired mind would confuse us.
Well, I've been having some problems lately, and I'm trying to figure out what is true love and what's false love and how to separate them two under the sun. I know what the biblical love is. I can see that, but for us under the sun and that, I have a hard time separating the two out.
All right. Well, it's not as simple as that, okay? Because there's lots of different categories of love, all right? The love, and there's actually in the Greek, there's several different words for it, okay? I mean, the love between a brother and a friend, that kind of thing, brotherly love is one type of love. It's very different than the kind of love of, say, a husband for a wife or a parent for a child, okay? And it's very different than, say, the love that's more like lust or passion, okay? More the sexual love, okay? So it's, because remember, love ultimately has to do with a certain level of desire. But how is that desire manifested, okay? And so if it's confused, it could be just because you're not seeing that there's these different types. And so there's an appropriate one for every type of relationship, okay? Now, if you don't know somebody very well, the kind of agape love where you're willing to sacrifice yourself for them may not be appropriate. You don't know them that well. But, you know, laying down your life for your brother, who's actually your brother or a family member, you know, that's more that Elohim level, you know, unconditional love. A lot of relationships have a conditional love, okay? A lot of you have a lot of friends that you're no longer friends with, that maybe you had them when you were younger or something happened, whatever. So that was not an unconditional thing. It was conditional on the fact that you had things in common, that you were walking in a certain direction in whatever area you had in common, and that made your friendship. And in that friendship, you expressed a brotherly love, a friend love with them that was the glue of the relationship. But there's a whole different level then when you're talking about the love you have for someone that you're going to spend every day of your life with when you get some, you know, when you have a marriage situation. And so, you know, I think probably your question has to do with, I'm single, how do I understand this as I'm going forward? All right? Well, the kind of love that you're going to have eventually or need to have eventually for a marriage is not something that you're going to be able to understand or truly feel until you're married. Okay? It comes out of a depth of relationship. It comes out of going through some stuff. And so what you have to do is use more of a intellectual and less emotional decision-making criteria in selecting your spouse. I'm not saying there's no emotion in it. You're going to, or at least you should, desire the spouse. You should be attracted and desire them. But that can't be the full driving force there. Okay, look at the love that Abba gives us, right? He says in Deuteronomy 10:12, the way he describes it, the way I interpret it, that we fear him, which means we have awe and reverence and respect for him. Then we walk in his ways. Then we see that his ways work and that he loves us, and then we love him. So love comes out of an experience with him and seeing the love. And by the way, guys, that's a good way to impress your wife. She should be able to look at you with awe and reverence. She should actually look up to you. Now, I'm not saying she should do it if you're not someone who's worthy of looking, being looked up to, because you haven't done anything to be admired. But ladies, you should look for a man you can admire, that you can look up to and be like, wow, that's my guy. That's the guy I want to look up. That's the one I look up to. You should. And so guys, you want to get a really quality lady. become the type of man that she could look up to and admire and be proud of, okay? But then it's in walking together, right? He said, then walk in all my ways. So in walking together, we get to see his love for us. And out of that comes our love for him. So in walking together. So the deeper love doesn't come from just light levels of experience and barely knowing each other. That comes later. So that's why you have to use a lot more rational reasonings to decide to walk together like forever, like you're going to get married. But the depth of that emotion has got to come through going through some of the wars and junk and nonsense that you're going to go through and see that you still want to be with each other. It really does. It comes out of the fires, okay? And that's, by the way, some of you have a much better relationship with your Creator because he helped you get through some fires, okay? Because he was there for you, and at the end of it, that's what was left. Okay, you and him, okay? And when I say you and your spouse going through some fires, I don't mean fires against each other. I mean, maybe together you go through some challenges, and together you go through some fires. And you can, you know, and if you want to kind of force the issue, just go on a family trip. And then you'll be going, come back, either killing each other or thick as thieves, ready to go. I mean, I'm just saying, it's fires that you go through together that really bring you closer, right? So, John, your question is a either or when there's a lot more levels to it, right? It's not like, you know, what is the proper love versus, a false love or a true love. Which is the right love for the right relationship, okay? Okay, you should have, and others have said that. They said, I really love you guys. Some people come up to the mic and said how they love the ministry. They love what I do or my elder or whatever. There is an appropriate ministerial vertical alignment love, okay? And that would not be some of those categories. It would be more specific. So, and that's where, again, because of trusting and experiencing and walking together, you recognize the love the ministry has for you. And so that's where people then expressing back how much they now understand that, so they fall in love with us, okay, on that level, okay? But that's not the marriage level. That's not the sexual level, okay? It's more of the unconditional versus brotherly. There's some sort of mix of that happening. The closer we get, the more we trust each other, the more it switches towards the agape or the unconditional. But it starts off at least on that brotherly. Okay? Does that help, John?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So the bottom line, the answer is, how do I know if it's love when you like somebody? That's really where I think it's kind of the question. And the answer is, I believe, which is really funny, because I actually said this on my wedding video. You know, people say, well, you'll just know when you know. And I never understood what that meant until I had it myself. Okay? And so I said that on the video. Okay? And then you just know. Because they say, well, how do you know if you're in love? I don't know. You just know. And people are like, yeah, but what does that mean? Well, when you get there, you'll know. Facts. And having experienced it, that's what I can tell you. Okay? So that being said, you know, be careful that you're not allowing an emotional desire for the other person. I like that's got a lot more passion to it, just a passion to be the driver, because that may blind you to all of the things that ultimately will make the thing not work, because it's only passion driven. The passion should come later, right? Fear Yahweh, walk in his ways, then we get the love and the passion and the desire for the relationship, okay? But the initial choosing the relationship was because we had reverence and awe for him. So we said, I want to be in a relationship with you because I have awe and reverence for you. And because of that, I'm going to trust you and do what you say. And then through that, I'm going to develop a relationship where I now have a passion for that relationship. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay? We don't choose very well our mates. And mostly, not because we're idiots, but because nobody ever told us how to do it. Okay, we were not trained. It is literally, at times, mind-boggling to me that the two biggest things we do require no training whatsoever. We can get married and we can have children with no training or qualification whatsoever, except age. That's it. You're old enough, boom, you can go ahead and do those two things. But those two things are the biggest ramifications of anything you can do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing with more ramifications than that. And yet we have no training whatsoever before doing it. Oh, there's lots of people to help counsel you after you screw it up and you don't know what to do. Once you're already in it. All right, listen. This is important for all of you that are single, okay? Getting this right is more important than not being single. In other words, don't just want to not be single, because then you will make a bad decision more likely, okay? And so getting it right means that you need to have a good criteria of what you need and what you're looking for and check those check boxes off with the person that you're considering. And there needs to be some negotiable ones, but there needs to be some black and white non-negotiables. And I've recommended to you a few, and of course, you know, that's up to you. If you are, we'll call it, committed to the particular walk that I teach, in other words, being a part of this part of the body, then you absolutely should not consider marrying anybody that's not also in this group. It's not a cultish thing. You will definitely be struggling with anybody that's not walking this walk. You might as well marry a Christian, because you're going to be that fighting all the time. Because just because they say they're messianic, a messianic is going to drive you crazy if they're not walking like you walk. Two cannot walk together unless they are in agreement. And you already know that this walk that I teach doesn't agree with most other teachings. So if this is not where you're going to walk, that's fine. Do whatever you want. I'm saying, but if you are here, you should not want someone who's not here. And I watch people do this all the time. And they make all kinds of excuses and all. And they do the same thing with their children. They want to support and encourage their children to go ahead and get married to somebody just because they don't want them to be single and alone and all that other stuff. I counsel a lot of marriages. And I don't counsel them because they're working well. You know, people will come to me and say, I just want to share with you how wonderful my marriage is. That never happens. Okay? There's not a thing called a perfect marriage where there's never a struggle. But at least you can minimize some of the struggle of the fact that at least spiritually you're walking the same. Okay? And then I encourage you to find all the other areas that you should be in agreement about how you're going to walk. Okay? And the things that my wife and I struggle with, a lot of them are things we never talked about before we got married that we don't necessarily agree on. I mean, not big deal things. Little things that people have challenges with, right? Okay? But they're things we never thought to vet before we got married. And maybe I'm glad, you know, on some level that we didn't, because then maybe we wouldn't have gotten married. I'm glad we got married. Okay? But the thing is, they are challenging. And so the same thing for you guys. You know, try to minimize the challenges up front, and you should know which things are deal breakers. Because at some point, there's going to be that moment where the person isn't going to want to walk the way you're walking, even though they kind of did whatever they could to win you over. You want somebody that's already here. Don't go find somebody that's willing to deal with your stuff. I get people telling me all the time, oh, I'm dating this person, and, you know, they're open to... No, I don't want to hear that. Don't be dating anybody that's open to... Okay, let's see where they go first, then maybe you consider dating them. Okay, and they have to do it for themselves. Oh, they're open to. All right, don't come to me when you guys have a marriage problem after I tell you not to do it, because it's going to happen. They're open to. It doesn't normally work. Like 99.9% of the time, it doesn't go that way. Let me tell you something. Go talk to any of the people in this room. Two types of people I want you to talk to. I want you to talk to, first, the people whose spouses are not in the walk with them. And find out just how much fun they're having. Okay? And how hard it really is. Okay? The people whose spouses are not in this walk. Then talk to the people whose spouse maybe is in the walk, but how much fun it was the 5, 10, or 20 years it took till they were in the same walk. Because there's no telling how long that might take. Also talk to the ones who might tell you, oh, well, they said that, you know, they were open and everything else, and then once they got married, that sort of went out the window at some point. You got to understand, both of you, whichever side you are, husband, wife, doesn't matter, both sides are going to say whatever they need to get the marriage to happen if that's what they want. So I'm not going to say one side's worse than the other. You will both say and do whatever's necessary to get what you want. But then once you get what you want, you're not going to keep it up. It doesn't maintain. And so let's not go there. Okay? Spend most of your time becoming the type of person that would be a great catch for what you're looking for. Now, notice how I worded that. Not just a great catch in general. What are you looking for? What standard of expectations do you have? And the higher they are, the better you need to be. The higher your standards need to be for you. I got a bunch of people thinking, well, I want a guy that does this, this, that, but look at you. Or I want a woman that's this, but look at you. Why would she want you? Why would he want you? I know it's what you want, but they have to want you. So describe for yourself what that person looks like, functions like, how your relationship would be and everything else, and then ask the question, that's what I want, but what would they be looking for? Would they be looking for me? And then you have to be honest with yourself. Well, they'd be looking for me if I blah, 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 fill in the blanks of where you fall short. And then fix it, work on it. You know? And that's really, you know, important. All right, Ashley.
I have two questions. First one, Constantine, Michael, and I were watching the Discovering Your Identity teaching, and I believe it was part two when I wish I brought my Bible with me because in that one I have all my notes in it, but I didn't know it was going to be in here today. You were talking about either the judges or disciples, and I was wondering, are the disciples, the 12 disciples, are those going to be the 12 judges up at the kingdom?
All right, so what the verse says is that the disciples will judge the 12 tribes.
Yes, okay? That was the verse.
That's the verse. Okay, so that it says what it says, that they will be judging the 12 tribes.
Okay, with that question then, I was wondering, is Judas, the one that went against Yeshua, I think?
Judas, yes.
Okay, was he considered a disciple or no?
No, he lost, he failed out of that. They brought in another one in Acts chapter 1, another Matthias. Okay.
Okay, so that takes out my other question. I don't have to worry about that then.
By the way, judging. Let's not get that wrong. So what will they be doing? Each one will be assigned to a tribe to be available to do Deuteronomy 17 stuff. Not judging like, come up here and let me just judge you. They're going to be those that have authority to do the Deuteronomy 17 things. So when that tribe has an issue, they will go to that judge or apostle over that tribe. That's the highest level court. They'll go to the lower courts first, and if it gets bounced up, eventually it'll get to that. All right? So not like they're going to be standing in judgment. They're going to be functioning in the role of Deuteronomy 17. Okay, when something is too hard, they don't know what to do, and they went through the lower courts, so to speak, and those judges weren't able to help them, and eventually we'll get to what ultimately in the kingdom will be like a supreme court, the highest court, where it'll go to the judge, which will be one of the apostles. Okay? Now, of course, it's higher than that to go to Yeshua, but I'm saying, but ultimately, that should be enough right there. Okay?
And my second question is, I hope I don't annoy or frustrate you with this one. But I really have been wondering and struggling with lately, why do people go back to where they come from? Like, and I don't mean anyone in specifically, but like I'm talking about like with addiction or their past like lives, like why do they, even if they've been out of it for so long, they were never going to go back kind of a thing, but then something happened and they're back. How and why does that work?
All right. So
it kind of goes with what we talked about last night.
Sure. All right. So there are some cases where people made some, we'll talk about like, for example, like with drugs and stuff, where you were exposed to things and actually know you're hooked. There are cases of that. But for the most part, either through that or just through the actual desire, it's about avoiding something painful. Okay? It's an escape. The lifestyles that people left had provided a lot of misery, but also the false feeling of escape. And so things get hard enough, your default is to go to the only thing that you may know that helps you feel no pain. And that could be sex, that could be drugs, that could be some sort of gambling, it could be something, okay? So people go to what helps them numb the pain, avoid the pain, escape from the pain. And so the reason they would go back is not because it was so great. They left it because they understood how bad it was. But even in that, it still provided them a sense, whether it was real or false, of escape. And so if people go, and that's why Hasatan will be allowed to put you into the moment where you can be pushed so hard to see if you'll go back. And Abba's going to sit there going like this, all right, I'm watching. What are you going to do? Because we could either take refuge in him, or we can run to these other things. And by the way, taking refuge in him does not necessarily numb your pain immediately. He wants you to deal with your life and your life issues and not avoid them and numb them, okay? And that's why people drink and do drugs and the shopaholics go to the stores, because all these things are false ways of like making you feel like you have control when you're out of control, or it numbs your pain, or you eat. Okay, there are people that numb themselves through the chemistry of food. Okay, these are all avoidances and pain, you know, maintenance, right? You're trying to deal with pain, emotional pain, or physical pain even. All right. I personally know people addicted to painkillers. They're pharmaceutically addicted, okay, and quite useless in life. And it's very sad to watch. But they're addicted to the painkillers because they're not dealing with their problem. Okay, all of these things that people run back to is because they've gotten to the point where they feel like they can't deal with their stuff. So they're running into a level of avoidance. They go to their default thing. So if it was drugs, that's where they go. If it was sex, that's where they go. If it was eating, that's where they go. If it, whatever it was, that's where they're going to go. Because in their mind, it worked. They also know that it was terrible, but that disappears over the level, but I'm in so much pain, and that made the pain go away, even short term, so that's where I'm going to go. Did that answer the question?
Kind of, but what's my reason? Because, I mean, I don't... Is it escape? I mean, what am I escaping? No,
your situation is a little different, and
that's a Tuesday at 2.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
No, but your situation is a little different. But basically, again, it's because you're dealing with something that doesn't really fit into what I'm discussing. It's a different thing. So your hand is being forced a little bit, and that's not the same thing as you just deciding I want to run back and escape to something.
Well, I've been wanting to make contact with things and just be like, I was telling him, I'm like, I don't know why, but like, I just want to be like, hey, how are you doing?
I understand. But ultimately, again, it's because you're trying to get out of a situation that you don't know how to get out of any other way. Okay. So this happens. Look, I was not aware for a long time. And this isn't necessarily her thing, but just kind of gives me, there's been lots of people I've talked to that I was never aware of till I got into ministry that were in witchcraft. Okay? And they dealt with other gods, other Elohim that were false, that gave them power, answers, solved their problems in their lives or whatever. And I've had people come to me, many people, say how hard it is when these situations come up in life that they normally would go that way with, because they knew how to do that and they knew what kind of result they would get, to now do it the right way, which doesn't get you the same speed of result and easy, quick fix, but that one has a very bad price. Okay, and so I've seen people struggle with that because it's what they're familiar with. It's what they've always done, or for a long enough period of time, it's what they did. And so now shifting to trusting him and relying on him and knowing that he may make you wait a while to get what you want, that could be really tough because instant gratification is a tool of the enemy. Okay, the enemy's going to give you what you want right now, but he's going to make you pay a high price later. Yahweh's not going to give you what you want right now, and you're going to get a great reward later. It's the opposite. Okay? All right, did that help? You're welcome. But that may be something to discuss more in private. All right, Melissa.
So I've been wanting to ask this question for a month, but apparently Yahweh wanted to deal with it today. So
Wait, I'm sorry. I just want to say one more thing about what we were just talking about. Just one more thing. You guys need, this isn't for you necessarily, it's for everybody. You need to know that this is the most important test that you end up with when they start, when there's temptation to go back to a lifestyle you've left. Okay? You must win this battle. Because that's your weak point. And HaSatan's job is to push every button he can in your weak points. And you must make them strong points where that button is no longer pushable. It's critical. Otherwise, you will be tempted. This is why people end up going to HaSatan at the end of the 1,000 years. Because those are the people that never really finished dealing with their weaknesses. And then he tempts them with instant gratification and power and whatever, all this false stuff that looks like all that, right? And it's very real, because they really will have power and this and that and the other thing up to a point, instantaneously or however quick it happens. But it's all at a very, very horrific price. Which a lot of people, generational prices, okay? Which a lot of people are very selfishly nearsighted and don't really care to think that through. They want what they want, and they want it now, okay? And they want to shortcut the system. Don't do this. I want to encourage everybody. This is your test of whether or not you're going to get to be in forever. Those moments are important tests. And if you can win, the button doesn't work anymore. Okay? But you have to win. Otherwise, that button will always be available. If every time you get into those weak moments and the button pushes and you go running that way, that button's very active. Okay? When Job was being looked at by HaSatan, what did he say to Yahweh? He said, I got nothing to work with here. There's no buttons to push. Now, of course, he said it's because Yahweh spoiled him. Yahweh said, no, there's just no buttons to push. He's a tzaddik. He's a righteous man. He doesn't have any buttons to push. That's how HaSatan can... You want to frustrate HaSatan? That's a frustrated HaSatan. Okay? Of course, HaSatan didn't want to believe that this was actually a righteous man. He wanted to say, well, of course, you spoiled him. And Yahweh says, well, that's fine. Take it all the way. We'll see. I know what Job's all about. Now, of course, his wife failed the test. And so, ladies, your husband may go through a test. They may pass, you may fail. That should be pretty scary and sobering. All right? Please, everyone, when these moments come up and you get tempted to go back to where you came from, never return to Egypt. You understand what I'm saying? You don't go back to where he delivered you from. It's the worst thing you can do. All right, Melissa.
So I knew that we were going to have this for the last month, that it would be our day today. And so during Sukkot, I had some tests and some surgery, and they came back pre-cancer. And I've had reports, you know, I've had cancer. I've been healed from it twice, and then COVID twice. And so then I came here, and there was things going on. But the Tennessee doctors are pretty smart here. You know, they're pretty thorough, and they seem to care. And then for a long time, I didn't trust doctors, but there is one I trust, and that's Yahweh. And so I've been asking him, because I was born with a bone disease, apparently, but no one knew back then that, you know, I was born with it. And so I kept thinking, you know, the dentist would say, you have these degenerate bones in your mouth in different places. So I started asking Yahshua, how can I be healed? I mean, I say, if you want to, you can heal me. And so what do I need to do? What's blocking my healing? You know, I do believe that medicine is food. And but then I have such a bone disease, I can't eat the raw foods and salads and greens like I want to, so I have to drink them. But it's a battle. So I got up this morning, and I went to John 5, that I felt like he took me there. And for the first time, I noticed that this man, you know, he was 38 years old, and there was the pool at the sheep gate, and the messenger would stir it, and people who got in there were healed, and the guy could never get in there because he never had anyone to help him. So then Yeshua came to him, and he said, do you wish to be healed? And he said, well, every time I try to get in, then somebody gets in ahead of me, and I can't get my healing. So he told him, take up your bed and rise up and walk. And I noticed that he asked him first, do you wish to be healed? And so I'm always saying, do you want to heal me? And so sometimes I think when you get older or when things look hopeless or you don't have the skills you think you need, that you really wish you could die instead. That would be so much easier than living. And so you have to really examine yourself, because a lot of people, when you get older, they face that. Not everybody's been a trooper like you have been in so many different things. And so then I noticed that Yeshua went and found him. They asked, who healed you? And he said, I don't know. He didn't know Yeshua. And so then it said afterward, Yeshua found him in the set apart place and said to him, see, you've been made well. Sin no more, so that no worse matter befalls you. The man went away and told the Yehuda it was Yeshua who made him well. And because of this, the Yehuda persecuted Yeshua and were seeking to kill him because he was doing the healings on the Sabbath. Well, so that tells me, you know, he found him in the set apart place. And so I have been wanting to ask you how we really, I know that the word is going to heal us. I know that being obedient is going to transform us and heal us. And there's, if you obey, you will be healed. But I know he heals some by death and some by, he heals them. And so, you know, I've been healed of cancer, but my bones are so bad. I was like, what do I do? And so there's so many different foods out there and so many different things different people tell you. So I'm studying different things and praying about the right thing for myself. But I know that so many people need healing, that we have pains and aches, and it might be your husband or wife that's a pain, or children, or it might be ailments, or it might be situations you're facing, but emotional, mentally, or whatever. We all need some kind of healing. And so for your people, I was wondering if you could... do you know what I'm trying to ask? Like, I need healing for my bones, but I've been healed before, and I know that it's food.
All right.
But I also know other things. So.
Okay, so let's separate two situations, okay? The situation with the pool, okay, with the water that the man wanted to go in. This was a magical, mystical understanding that something would be done without actually fixing the problem, that you would actually be from outside healed. Okay, that's what they were understanding. If I could just get in the water, be the first one, that it would somehow magically heal me. And Yeshua came to say, you don't need that. That's not where the true source comes from. I am, right? Now, that's not anything like having something that you can treat and being told how to treat it. What he had wasn't treatable. Okay, he couldn't walk. He was born handicapped and paralyzed for, you know, however long he was. Okay, which is why he couldn't drag himself into the pool fast enough, right? Now, that being said, your situation, and this goes back to, I think, even what we were talking about earlier with Taylor, is that, you know, we have a lot of back and forth between that, which is, we call it allopathic or standard medicine, versus, you know, more naturopathic stuff. The allopaths are very good at one thing, okay? I'm not saying they're perfect at it, but they're very good at least diagnostically being able to tell you, by the way, you have a degenerative bone disease, or you have this kind of problem with your liver, or your this, or your digestion, or your cardiovascular system, whatever it is. They're fairly good at identifying the problem. So first thing you need to do is find some people or somebody out there that can, you know, who has a history of dealing with things like what you have, who can identify what the problem is, and then find somebody that you're willing to look at. Look, I'm dealing with somebody I like, okay, who has helped me to get all of my numbers when I look at my blood work that I just had done again here a couple weeks ago, and compare it to when I got the first blood work done a few years back when you saw how bad and sick I was. Okay, and it's completely amazing, okay? Like, the blood work is great, all right? All the numbers are great, all right? I even had a chance to show the blood work to one of our members in Houston, Dr. Mosley, and she said the numbers were great. There's one or two numbers that could go up just a little bit to be adjusted, but they weren't like way, you know, way off. They were just, she just wanted them to be a little higher or whatever, or a little lower somewhere. But the numbers are really great, especially compared to where they were. So my point is, you know, I mean, let me just kind of give you a point. Not like when you, if you ever get blood work, there's like a range you're supposed to be in. I had almost nothing in the ranges. It was either above or below. And when I first got this, I mean, nothing was where it needed to be. Now, I worked with someone who I believed had, the skill set to help me to get the numbers adjusted by doing things supplementation-wise and changing some of the things I was doing. And so I did, and I tried it. Now, that being said, though, you have to find somebody, and I can recommend the person I go to you, whatever, but you can find somebody that understands and has worked with people with this bone problem, if you know what it's called and have a way to identify it, and find out what their program is to deal with through a combination of natural and maybe even medical stuff that you can do. Okay, because that's what the person I work with actually works with both. Some of the things I take are medical. Some of those things I take are natural. All right? And so the key is finding someone that actually knows what to do for what you have. And there's people out there that know. You just have to first know what it is you're dealing with. Okay? Like, for example, you don't know what you've got, and you find out you got Lyme disease. Okay, so you got to find someone who actually successfully treats Lyme disease. If you find out that you have some sort of, kidney thing or liver thing, then you got to go to somebody who knows how to treat that. And then give that a shot and see, if that's what's going to work. But that's what I would recommend to you, is that you have to go find somebody. Don't just do your own research on what you should be doing yourself. You really should get some guidance from somebody that has some expertise. Okay? Now, it also is good, in my opinion, to work with somebody that if you do find something on your own, you can bring it to them, and they're not going to look at you like, well, that didn't come from me, so you can't, the person I work with will take anything I bring to her, she'll say, okay, that sounds pretty good. Let's try it. She'll look at it and she's not offended by me coming up with something. Okay? She doesn't have any issue with that. She'll look at it or she'll tell me why I don't think that's a good idea, and then she'll explain why. But she's open, for me adding things to the program that I've come up with in my research. Okay? And so that's what I would recommend to you, okay? So we do trust him ultimately to do the healing, but he expects us to make our own effort up to whatever degree that's still available to us, all right? And most of the things we deal with physically that are treatable, we are expected to go out and find those treatments, okay? There are things that we can get that are not treatable. Then we expect him to heal them, okay?
The pool was not of Yahweh? It was...
This was a superstitious something that we don't know what it was, okay? But it was not. Yahweh didn't say, look, I'm going to put this magical pool and just any random person gets in it first gets healed. Okay. That doesn't make sense to anything Yahweh teaches us, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. But it also shows you that in the scriptures, there absolutely are powerful things happening that are not of Yahweh. Because there's nothing in the scriptures that says that people that went in the pool didn't get healed. It says whoever went in first got healed. So apparently there was something going on with that. It doesn't tell us what it was connected to either. Okay? But Yeshua said to him, hey, that's not the source of really what you're looking for. I am. And if you would believe that, you could be healed. And so some of us need to take the lesson of maybe we're looking to the wrong source. But not the source by treatment. We're talking about the source for just outside of us healing. All right? Because some of you have done that in witchcraft and other things where you looked for outside sources to heal you. There should only be the Creator to do that. Okay?
Say that again, please.
There should only be the Creator to do that. All right? And so, but if something is something you can treat, because remember, there wasn't anything to do with this guy to be treated. So he's looking for a magical outside spontaneous thing to happen if he got in the water. That's not taking supplements and treating anything, okay?